that I think you probably heard Pastor Nunes say about 3 weeks ago, in perhaps different form. My instructor for the lay speaker courses was Reverend Lorraine DeArmet, who most recently served the Westbury Church and is now retired. She said that when you look at the lectionary readings, you know, most pastors invariably go for the gospel. But take a look at all of them and consider going with the epistle. And if you want a real challenge, let's preach from the Old Testament or even the Psalm. But never, ever attempt to preach on all four of them. And I think that's good advice, but because they're so well connected, I'm going to take the liberty this morning of just pointing out the connections. And perhaps, you know, having heard the epistle and the gospel, you can go home and read the Old Testament reading and the Psalm, and you'll see this. They have the readings have two physical things in common, and those are rock and water. You've obviously picked up the water in the story in the Gospel of John with the Samaritan woman at the well, and how the water can be the living water, which is really the Spirit of God. In the Epistle to the Romans, John speaks of salvation and the Spirit, which are the two things that are really the theological or spiritual things that the passages all have in common. If you look at the Old Testament reading, that's about the incident in which the Jews wandering in the desert were thirsty, and they were exhorting Moses to do something about it. On instructions from God, he took his staff and struck the rock at Horeb, and water came from it. And then the Psalm happens to talk about God being the rock of our salvation. And salvation in this case is really about the strength of God rather than the redemption through Christ, which would come later. So they have all these things in common. And I'm going to concentrate really on the epistle, because Paul, as he usually does, tends to tie all of these things together, particularly salvation and the Spirit. So looking at thinking about what Paul has said in the epistle, he talks about justification through faith, and which gives us peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. And he starts talking first about salvation. He talks about the sacrifice that Christ died for us while we were weak and while we were sinners. And clearly, I don't think you can move to the second part of what he's talking about, that is the Spirit, without first recognizing that. One of the things I tend to have a bit of concern about is that very often, particularly evangelical preachers and evangelical Christians, tend to dwell on the redemption. Christ died for my sins. And I say, absolutely, I firmly believe that, but there's a lot more to that. And first of all, yes, Christ died for my sins, but he also taught me how to live. So Paul first reminds us that Christ died for us while we were sinners, and we were redeemed through his death and resurrection. He doesn't actually mention his teachings. Well, maybe there's a good reason for that, because if you think about it, Paul's letters themselves were about the only written teachings that there were. The Gospels had not yet been written. But then you get to to emphasize the importance, if you think about the account of the Samaritan woman at the well, many believed in that city in Samaria, not just because of the woman's testimony, but because in the 2 days that Christ was with them, they heard his word. So many believed because of the woman's witness, and many more believed because of the word. So I would add one more thing to Paul's accounting of what fully encompasses God's grace. There is the salvation, and there is also the word. But to try to keep it something that also starts with S, I would just say the scriptures. So the salvation through the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, and Jesus' teachings as revealed to us by the word is contained in the Bible are important. And then finally, there's this concept of a spirit, which is much more elusive, and that's what I want to spend most of the time on this morning. Back when Stony Brook was starting to move into athletics, basketball and football in particular, I would get these mailings that say, "Catch the Spirit." And I think if you think about it, you really can't catch the Spirit. Mm. It's going to catch you.
Praise
and
God.
I've even titled my sermon this morning, "Seeking the Spirit." But again, while you may seek the Spirit, it's really, at the end of the day, going to find you. Now, all of us have something of the Spirit of God in us, clearly. You wouldn't be here this morning if you didn't. But we all have it to various degrees. We experience it to different degrees and in different ways at different times in our lives. I happen to be taking a lay speaker, lay servant course, as it's called these days, taught by Reverend Steve Knutson from Wantagh. It's called Recognizing Your Spiritual Gifts, Rediscovering Your Spiritual Gifts. And I know Susan Greenfield has taken that course, and she actually preached on spiritual gifts about a little over a year ago, which you may recall. But there's a very powerful story by the author of the book that's used as the basis. A really incredible story of a pastor, Charles Bryant, who was about 54 years old, had received his calling some 30 years earlier, and by all appearances, he was a very successful pastor. He didn't believe that. As he described his situation, "I was miserable, I was burned out, and I wanted out." He was ready to leave the ministry. So one Saturday morning, happened to be a pretty dismal, rainy day, he was driving to church to get prepared for the worship service the next day. And he said, "You know, people are always giving me things." In this case, people had given him given him some tapes. He had nothing better to do, so he threw one of the tapes in the cassette player. Remember those? And here was the testimony of a businessman he knew who, at the age of 54, had rediscovered God in his life in a very powerful way. And this was so moving to Charles Bryant that he literally started to cry. And that evening, he spent pretty much on the floor in his home, alternately crying and praying. And he said that, "God, my life is worthless, and I'm actually worse." But somehow, in that pitch darkness, he felt and actually saw what he described as a dark form enter his body and leave through the top of his head back into that dark room. And all of a sudden, he felt this peace and serenity he had never felt before. He slept through the night, woke up very peacefully, woke up the next day totally energized for the service and for the rest of his ministry. And so, very powerful story. And I have to confess that I really hadn't done very much in the way of anything for Lent. I hadn't given up anything. Sometimes things have a way of finding you. My wife and I have been kind of trying to clean out the house, make sure we preserve things that are important, get rid of those that aren't. And in the words of one of my neighbors, she said, "If I don't clean up my house, my son's going to hate me when I'm gone." But my wife said, "Look what I found." And she found this little prayer book written by Ralph Spalding Cushman. It's about 4 inches tall. probably first published in the 40s, and now it's actually out of print, that I had used in college. And I opened it up, and of course the first thing I recall was, gee, this is what I used virtually every day when I was in college, and boy, I needed it. But the second thing that caught me is that my pastor at the time had written a note to me inside the cover, and I remembered that pastor, and I remembered the experience described by this Charles Bryant, who wrote Rediscovering Our Spiritual Gifts. I said, wait a minute, I've seen something like that before. So let me just take you back to a time when I was actually graduating from high school. And believe it or not, at that time, it was common practice to have a really more or less a worship service on the grounds of the school, if you can believe that. But remember, this is 50 years ago, and this is South Carolina. A local preacher would be picked to deliver what I guess they kind of called it a baccalaureate sermon or devotion. And they would have to rotate it very carefully between the Baptists and the Methodists and the Presbyterians and the Episcopalians. Well, this year my pastor was picked. And he was very young. Typically the South Carolina Conference would take a brand new pastor out of seminary, stick him in a rural charge with maybe four churches on it, and it's way over anybody's head. And I knew he was struggling, because once in a while he would say, I may not be the best preacher, but I am sincerely trying to help you find God. So clearly there was humility there, there was a devotion, but maybe not a lot of confidence. So he found out he was going to be doing this, and he actually approached me and said, gee, I'm really apprehensive about this service. Can you tell me anything? Well, what do I know? I mean, I'm a senior in high school, and wasn't very helpful, I'm sure. I just said, well, you know the context, and I just went over the context with him, which is obvious, graduating seniors going on with the rest of their lives, whatever. But I said, I really believe that you don't have anything to worry about. You're going to do a great job. And that was it. Well, he did some job. I mean, this was a gymnasium. He hit a three-point shot from mid-court. Every parent, every student in that gymnasium, I guess as we call it, was moved. So much so that one of the students who had this kind of knack for being somewhat irreverent actually stood up at the end of the service and said, "Go, Bobby." Bobby was his nickname. He was Robert Waddell. I think had the service not gone the way it would have, everybody would have looked and said, oh my God, him again. Oh, give me a break. But it was so in keeping with what happened. Now, what did happen? He was apprehensive about this challenge. And when he was confronted with the challenge, you know, real time, he just exuded this spirituality that touched everyone. So we don't know what happened in the meantime. It could have been something maybe as dramatic as what Charles Bryant described, but clearly something happened. And in the words of the hymn written by Richard Gaither, he touched me, something happened, and now I know clearly that did happen. So the Spirit has a way of reaching us if we're receptive and we're open to it. The other way I got something out of this prayer book was to actually lift one of the prayers out of it. The opening prayer I actually adapted from one of the prayers found in that book. It probably looks very unfamiliar. And the language, you know, in something written in that period, quite different than used today, so I worked with it a little bit. But if any of you are interested in trying to find it, it's out of print, but you can probably find old copies on eBay or Amazon. But I think that's really the three things that Paul laid out: salvation, the Word or the Scripture, and Spirit are really key to finding God's grace. Now again, more about how you try to capture the Spirit. As I said earlier, we go through our lives with various levels of intensity as far as God's grace goes. And at times we feel God's Spirit very, very intensely, and others we don't. Maybe we even get to the situation that this pastor described, where he was totally burned out. And somehow that Spirit gets rekindled in us if we give it a chance. But we have to give it that chance on an ongoing basis. Clearly, Lent is one of those times when we can reach out to God and ask Him to rekindle that Spirit within us. To whatever extent we possess God's Spirit, there are plenty of voids in our being that can be filled with a lot more of it and make us have much more dynamic lives as Christians. We mentioned Lenten practices. It just happens that the death anniversary for my wife's brother and mother are both in the same week in March, so I can count on going to Mass at least twice during the first week in March. And I found in the back of the church at St. Joseph's in Garden City a little Lenten pamphlet that had something I really want to share with you. And as I've talked to others about, including those in my course, no one has ever really heard of this, but it's quite simple. It's called 1-1-1, A Simple Approach to Lent. And it starts off with one sin. Now, all of us have at least one sin or a shortcoming that we could address during Lent. So as you go through the Lenten season, and it's not too late to start this, it's not too late to do this at any point in the Christian calendar, at any point in your life, to rekindle the Spirit of God within you. Think about how I can eliminate that. So, one sin. Work on eliminating it, or at least minimizing it. The second one is the one that we're all familiar with, and that's called subtract one. So that's the second one. You know, give up something. I know Pastor Nunes is always talking about chocolate. My wife is always talking about wine. There's something that you could give up that could be a little bit of a challenge, but yet not something that you can't actually, you know, deliver on. And that keeps God, you know, in the forefront of your mind and your heart. And the last one is add one. If you're going to subtract one, let's also add one. Adding one can be going to an additional worship service. It could be joining a study group. I found, and I'm sure you've found this as well, Susan, when you take the lay servant courses or get into any small group setting, there's an intensity there that you just can't generate on your own, because you feed off of the contributions of others and you learn so much. So join a group. Set aside additional time for prayer, and maybe find some service that you could do for others. So remember that concept for next Lent, or even for the rest of this season, and as you go forward, 1-1-1. Concentrate on one sin, subtract one thing, add one thing, and see if it makes a difference. I'm convinced that it will, and I wish you all well through the rest of this Lenten season in rediscovering God's Spirit in your own life.